I hope you're ready to join me in Judges chapter 15 as we continue the story of the judge Samson. I believe Samson and Samuel were born right around the same time, both right around the beginning of the Philistine 40 years of oppression, right around the beginning of the 40 years of the high priesthood of Eli. And Samson has now grown up to adulthood, probably right around 20. And he has decided he wants to get married. And in our last story, we found out he fell in love with a Philistine woman in a town about 8 or so miles farther west toward the Mediterranean from his hometown oh my goodness, I forgot his hometown now. Zora. Sorry about that. Things blow up at the wedding because Samson tells a riddle to his 30 Philistine groomsmen about the honey that he ate out of the dead lion that he'd killed on the period between the betrothal and the actual wedding trip. And the only way that the Philistines could figure it out was by threatening his bride. But they did get it out of her. She cried and cried until Samson finally told her. She passed it immediately on to them, and they won the bet. And so Samson paid off his promise of one garment for every groomsman by going down to Ashkelon and apparently starting a little mini war with some Philistines and taking their clothing right off their dead bodies and presenting those bloody garments to his 30 groomsmen. And then he went back home to Zora in a huff, very mad, abandoning, for all she knew, his wife. And so at the very end of chapter 14, it says that Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his best man. So one of the 30, the senior of the 30, ends up marrying the bride. Samson doesn't even know that he's been divorced in absentia. So chapter 15 starts, after some days, at the time of the wheat harvest. So the wheat harvest starts at in the third month, always that first part of the third month of the Jewish year. So right at the break point between late spring and early summer. And so Samson came to visit his wife with a young goat. So he's coming to say, I'm sorry. Probably not just to his wife that he left, but probably to his in-laws, because, you know, he ran off and just left her in the lurch. That wasn't right. So he seems to be bringing a thank you meal. And so he said, I'm going to go in to my wife in the chamber. So he says, I want to go in and see her. But her father would not allow him to go in. Her father said, I really thought that you utterly hated her. So I gave her to your companion. So I've already accepted dowry money from the best man. She's now engaged. She's betrothed to somebody else. You just left. I thought you were done with her. But then he makes this offer. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she is? Please take her instead. So dad is still wanting to have this relationship, but wants to work it out and says, you know, her younger sister is available to get married to. Let's follow through with that. How about that? And Samson is not having it. He is angry. He is angry about the way that the Philistines have treated him and stolen the woman he loves. So Samson said to them, "This time I shall be innocent in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm." And Samson then went and caught 300 foxes, little fennec foxes that are native to Israel. I'm sure it took him a little while to go out there and trap these things. 300 foxes are a lot of foxes. And then he does something with them that shocks me. I can't believe you'd do this to an animal, but he does. And I want you to remember that Samson is a product of his times. He is part of the period of the judges where everybody is doing whatever they feel is fit in their own eyes. He's making it up as he goes. He wants to get even with the Philistines. Now, God is going to use him to break the Philistines. But how he does it is all on him. He's the one making up these mechanisms of vengeance. So once he'd taken the time to catch all these foxes, he then took some torches, so wood with maybe some flammable material wrapped around one end of it. And it says he turned them tail to tail. So he's setting them out in pairs. He put a torch between each pair of tails. Now, we don't know for sure this is how it has happened, but this is how I would dramatize it if I were trying to stage it for some sort of movie, is that he probably would have muzzled the foxes so that he could deal with them without them biting him. He ties their tails together, and then he ties a long string with this torch that's unlit to the tails of these two foxes that are stuck together. And then he lights off the torch, and he lets the pair of foxes go. And of course, they're going to be running away from him, but they're also going to start running away from the fire. They're running away from each other, and they're going to be zigging and zagging all over the place. And what happens is he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines, and he set fire to the stacked grain and the standing grain, as well as the olive orchards. So he sets these 150 pairs of flaming foxes loose all around the region of the offending Philistines of Timnah that he has a beef with. And he trashes this year's grain crop, as well as the olive trees. Now, olive trees live a good long time, as long as they don't burn. And so he's really trashing their economy. In the aftermath, verse 6, the Philistine said, "Who has done this?" You can kind of picture them out there. They've been fighting fires in the middle of the night, perhaps, and fighting the fires till the next day. And now it's all smoky, and they're assessing the damage, and they realize the entire crop is gone, and it's going to be hard to recover from this. And now it's time to figure out, how did this happen? And in their investigation, this is what they found. They said, "Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion." So they pin it on Samson's father-in-law, the fact that Samson's father-in-law gave the bride to the companion, that's what ticked Samson off. That's what got everything burned. And so what do? The Philistines came and burned her and her father with fire. So they come and murder, but they use fire as their mechanism, probably to match up what they just had happen to them. It's a tit-for-tat situation throughout this story. And then Samson realizes that the woman he loved and wanted to have his life with is dead. And his father-in-law and his in-law family, all dead because of these Philistines. And so Samson said to them, if this is what you do, I swear I will be avenged on you. And then after that, I'll quit. And so he takes them on head to head. And verse 8 says, he struck them hip and thigh with a great blow. So he wades into these guys that are coming after him and that he came after because they'd murdered his wife and his wife's family. And they get into this altercation. And even though I've never been able to track down perfectly the beginning meaning of this hip and thigh idea, you can certainly appreciate what it means. It's just he's all out. He's like a Jackie Chan sort of movie going on here with the power of the Holy Spirit, letting him take on 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 or more of these Philistines, and he wins. And he's just laying them out. There are corpses of Philistines everywhere. And then after he had, you know, finished with the last one of them, he went down and he stayed in the cleft of the rock of Etam. Now, this is somewhere over in Judean Simeon territory. And so the Philistines, they can't let this go. As I said, this is a tip for tap. It's back and forth. It's total revenge. Always one-upmanship between Samson and the Philistines throughout his life. And so they can't let this go. They want to arrest him and bring him to their justice for all these deaths and all this destruction. So the Philistines came up and they encamped in Judah and they made a raid on Lehi. Now, nobody knows for sure where Lehi is, but we've got some sense of it. It seems to be up that stream from Timnah up to Zorah, and if you keep following it eastward, there's a little branch, wadi drainage, that comes off of there that goes up toward Bethlehem, up into what is later called the Valley of the Giants, the Valley of the Rephaim. And it's thought that Lehi is somewhere in that general vicinity toward Bethlehem. Now, why are they going there? Because they have heard that Samson is somewhere in Judah territory. So they're going to where there's a bunch of Judeans in the core of their territory, in the core of their tribal region, and demanding him. So the men of Judah came, "Why have you come up against us?" And they said, "We have come up to bind Samson to do to him as he did to us." So they let the Judeans know, "We are here to take Samson back. He's in your territory somewhere. If you don't give him to us, we'll have to just break everything and kill everybody until we find him." So the Judeans, who are quite cowed by the Philistines at this time, they decide to find and extradite Samson. So the 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam. So they know where he's at. And they said to him, "Do you know that the Philistines are rulers over us? Why then is this that you've done to us?" So it's basically, "Don't you get it, Samson? You Danite. Philistines are in charge. What are you doing causing all this trouble with them and then coming and hiding out in our territory and bringing all this on us?" And so he said back to them, as they did to me, so I've done to them. And they said, we've come down to bind you, and that we may give you into the hand of the Philistines. So there's 3,000 of them. So they have some sense that Samson is a really frightful guy. He can take on hundreds and kill them. And so they come prepared to overwhelm him if that's what's needed to save their tribe from the Philistines. Says, we've come to bind you that we can give you into the hand of the Philistines. Samson said to them, you swear to me that you will not attack me yourselves. And they said, no, we'll only bind you and give you into their hands. We will surely not kill you. So he's open to going back into the Philistines' custody, but he needs to extract from the Judeans, from his fellow Israelis, a promise, an oath in the name of He Who Is, no doubt, that they won't give him back as a dead body. So they agree. No, we don't want to kill you. We'll just tie you up. That's it. And then we're going to hand you over to them, and then it's between you and them. So they bound him with two new ropes, so green ropes, and brought him up from the rock. When they came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him. So they're all excited to see him tied up, ready to be handed over. And it was then that the spirit of He Who Is rushed upon him. So here it comes again, that we've seen this three times now, that he seems to be just an ordinary guy. And then suddenly God's spirit comes on him, pumps him full of adrenaline, beefs up his muscles, beefs up his reflexes, and he is capable of supernatural fighting. So the spirit of He Who Is rushed upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that's caught fire. So flax is not very substantial when it's on fire. It just starts coming apart. And so that's exactly what happened. And his bonds melted off his hands. He just popped his bonds. And then he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, which tells me that there's a dead donkey right there. And he reaches down and grabs hold of the jawbone of this donkey skeleton, and he starts using it as a weapon. Now, animal jawbones were used to make farm implements, and I've seen examples of this, where they'll take the jawbone and they'll take the teeth out of the sockets and they'll replace the teeth with little metal points that are fairly sharp, and then they will swing this jawbone like a little sigh, like a little hand sigh. And so that's what he does. He grabs a donkey jawbone and he starts using it like a sigh or like a little club. And he just starts wailing on these Philistines. And he ends up striking 1,000 men with it. And then he composes a little song or a little poem to go along with what he's doing. With the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey have I struck down 1,000 men. So you have to picture the sight as an aftermath of this battle. And again, it's like something out of the movies. It's like something out of The Matrix, when they're reproducing Mr. Smith's trying to take Neo down, or when Jackie Chan in one of his movies is just being assailed by all these waves of people and just keeps laying them down. And so that's what he does. And they're laying in piles all around him. Perhaps he's even standing on some of the ones he's already taken out as more come at him until it's all over with. And all these Philistines, this invading force that the Judeans were afraid of, they're all dead. And the Judeans have watched this. Think about that. The Judeans have been witnesses of this event. And so as soon as he finished with his little poem, his little song, he threw away the jawbone out of his hand. So he tosses it off to the side. And so the place ends up being called Ramoth Lehi, which means the hill, Ramoth, of the jawbone. So that's how Lehi gets its name. And of course, unsurprisingly, he was very thirsty. I am sure using up all that energy, even if it is God's supernatural power giving it to you, is still going to make you dehydrate. And so he called out to He Who Is, and he said, "You've granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant. Shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" So here he is. He's got to be right around 20. That seems to be the most logical chronology for these stories. So he's a very young man. He is a kid. And after this great victory, he yells out to God, "So, after this great victory, you're going to let me die of thirst and be taken over by the Philistines?" And so God split open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came out from it. So God gives him a special water place, opens up a new spring. And so when he drank of it, his spirit returned, and he revived. And again, the Judeans see this happen. They see the miracles. This allows them to identify him as the next judge of Israel, the one that's going to be taking care of things down here for the folks that have to deal with Philistines. Now, Eli is the high priest, and he's functioning as the judge leader up in the north, up by Shiloh. Samuel is the prophet that people are going to up at Shiloh on a regular basis to get their answers from God. But they're away from the Philistine area, so they're not dealing with the Philistines. That is going to be Samson's area. And so the Judeans, who are right here on the edge, they see it, and I'm sure this is why they accept him as Israel's leader against the Philistines. So when he drank, his spirit returned, he revived, and therefore the name of it was called En Hakkore, which means the spring of him who called. It's at Lehi to this day. So the author of the book of Judges, this section of it, lets us know. Yeah, everybody knows when you go to Lehi, the spring that's right next to there, that's the one that we're talking about in this story. You can go there and drink water out of it yourself. And then verse 20, he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. So the first 20 years of his life, I think, the Philistines were kind of unopposed. During the 20 years of Samson's adulthood, the Philistines don't have an easy way to carry out their oppression of the Israelis, because Samson is always responding to make them back off or to not do this or not do that. That one line is all we have to describe his 20 years of service to God and service to the people of Israel. The rest of the stories that we have are stories about him getting in trouble because of women. We already had one of them that came at the very beginning. Here is the next one. Chapter 16, Samson went to Gaza, which is down on the coast. We all know where Gaza is at nowadays. It's a Philistine city-state. There he saw a prostitute, so a woman for hire. He went into her. We don't know when this happened. Anywhere in his term as judge. We don't have a clue. But the Gazites were told, Samson's come here. So they surrounded the place. They set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They all kept quiet all night. They said, let us wait till the light of the morning. Then we're going to kill him. So they decide to ambush him when he's here feeding his flesh. But Samson turns the tables on him. He lay till midnight. At midnight, he arose. He took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts. Now, the gate that I think they're looking at is probably the big gate that is open for major traffic to come in and out each day. This gate seems to be a pedestrian gate that's locked up. And so he grabs a hold of this pedestrian gate and he pushes it out of place, picks the whole thing up, bar and all. And he put them on his shoulders and he carried them to the top of the hill that is in front of Hebron. Now, the phrasing is maybe a little bit confusing, I think, in our English. It's he takes them to the top of the hill that is toward Hebron. So he leaves Gaza, goes, I think, probably about a mile or so, where there's a hill, and he just plops them down there as proof to the Gazites. You can't keep me in. God let me out by giving me my strength. And so he will continue to lead the Israelis and be a thorn in the side of the Philistines for the full 20 years until the next story of the next woman.